shouted over the wail of alarms. The Shane Sword wasn't designed to absorb energy, and soon the feedback would destroy it, probably along with Gypsy's arm.
We gotta get out of here.
To where? Jake wondered. An idea struck. He reared up and drove one fist down. Gypsy Avenger did the same, smashing a hole through the ice floe at her feet. Gypsy dropped down through the hole, disappearing into the black water. Inside the conpod, Jake and Lambert reeled, trying to hold Gypsy's balance as she sank. The water was deep enough to cover them, and as they landed on the bottom, Jake could feel Lambert in his head, wondering what the hell they were going to do now.
"Wait for it," he said.
Above the hole in the floe was a bright glow against the dimmer background of the heavy ice. A shadow appeared in the brightness. Obsidian Fury looking down through the hole.
"Now," Jake said.
Gypsy Avenger fired its own missile volley straight up through the hole. Each missile was programmed before it left its launch tube to go up through the hole and then straight back down to explode on the ice around Obsidian Fury's feet. As the explosion sounded in the water, Gypsy leaped up from the seafloor, powered by maneuvering jets built into her lower legs. She surged up through the enlarged hole as Obsidian Fury crashed down. Gypsy caught Obsidian Fury before the rogue Jaeger could regain its balance, driving it back up through the ice and pounding it as they rolled. But Obsidian Fury reacted quickly, absorbing the first blows and wrestling Gypsy down. The plasma saws appeared again, ready to impale Gypsy Avenger. Jake stayed calm. They were never going to win a straight-up fight with Obsidian Fury. The last encounter had taught them that much. They had to keep surprising it. The drop into the ice had given Gypsy a chance to do some damage. Now Obsidian Fury thought it had Gypsy down, and it was time to spring another surprise.
"Plasma cannon now," he said. "Hell yeah."
Lambert thrust out his left hand, and Gypsy Avenger's left hand rearranged itself into a plasma cannon. The blast rocked Gypsy Avenger back and sent Obsidian Fury flying back across the ice floe to land on its back trailing smoke. Gypsy Avenger rose, deploying her chain sword again. Obsidian Fury got up, but not as fast as it had before. They were doing some damage. Obsidian Fury charged, brandishing its plasma saws. Only when it redeployed them, they multiplied into a storm of whirling blades on each arm.
"Oh, shit,"
Jake and Lambert said in unison. Gypsy Avenger's armor plating wasn't going to stop those saws for long. But Jake was already watching the nuances of Obsidian Fury's stances. He remembered the fight in Sydney. If Obsidian Fury did what it had done last time, there would be an opening. Obsidian Fury shifted its weight to slash one of its plasma saws at Gypsy Avenger's head, the move triggering an alert from the combat readiness program built into Gypsy Avenger's sensors. Yes, they had seen this before. And the answer was,
"Follow my lead!"
Jake cried out. Gypsy Avenger was already ducking as they saw Obsidian Fury begin the move. Sidestepping under the incoming plasma saw, they struck out with a chain sword as Gypsy Avenger slid along the ice, tearing open Obsidian Fury's torso. Obsidian Fury staggered past, pieces of its armor shedding onto the ice. Its power core was exposed, leaking energy that started small fires inside it.
"He's hurt!"
Jake crowed. Lambert leaned into a charge.
"Go for his power core!"
Obsidian Fury parried the first blows of the chain sword, and Jake got a little too eager. He extended Gypsy Avenger's arm in a thrust meant to destroy the exposed power core, but Obsidian Fury was still fast. It dodged to one side, and the chainsaw drove into its thigh. Planting its other leg, Obsidian Fury slashed a plasma saw down and amputated their chainsaw. The sudden loss of mass changed Gypsy's center of gravity and sent her tumbling. Jake and Lambert barely got her up and turned around before Obsidian Fury came at them again with the saws. Gypsy Avenger caught Obsidian Fury's wrist, but the plasma saws gouged into the side of Gypsy's head. The conpod shook and small electrical fires filled it with smoke. Jake and Lambert stopped the saws' progress, grunting with the effort and slowly, painfully, beginning to push them back. If they hadn't already damaged Obsidian Fury, it would never have worked. But they had, and Obsidian Fury gave way, inch by inch, until Gypsy Avenger had twisted the saws away from her head. Jake and Lambert felt the rogue Jaeger's balance shift, and they seized the advantage, torquing Obsidian Fury's arms around and jamming its plasma saws straight into its own chest. The energy discharge flared through Obsidian Fury as Gypsy followed up with a shattering headbutt straight into its face. They beat the rogue Jaeger down, batting aside its weakening defenses.
Still dangerous, Obsidian Fury dragged the saws free and almost caught Gypsy with a desperate strike. But as Gypsy ducked the blow, Jake and Lambert reached out and yanked the broken chain sword out of Obsidian Fury's leg. In the same moment, they reared up and drove the blade into Obsidian Fury's neck. With one hand on the sword, Gypsy Avenger drove Obsidian Fury back. Her other hand punched into the Aeger's torso and tore out the power core. The surge from the destabilized core burned through Obsidian Fury, frying its systems. Energy arcs flared out from its head and torso as its limbs spasmed out, and then went limp. Obsidian Fury crumpled to the ground. The ice flow rocked gently and stabilized. Gypsy Avenger stood over the downed Jaeger and tossed away the smoking power core. Steam hissed away from the spot where it landed on the ice. Time to see who had done all this, Jake thought. Time to meet the people who killed his sister. He reached down and Gypsy Avenger lifted Obsidian Fury's faceplate off. Steam rose from the interior of the Conpod as the warm air inside came into contact with the freezing Arctic air outside. As it cleared, Jake was stunned by what he saw.
What the hell is that?
There were no red-suited kaiju cultists inside, no rogue mercenaries and pseudo-military rip-offs of the PPDC drive suit. In fact, no humans at all. The interior of Obsidian Fury's Conpod was unlike anything Jake had ever seen. Where an ordinary Jaeger had an open hemispherical space with a drift cradle and consoles in the center and critical sensor equipment surrounding it, the inside of Obsidian Fury's head was almost entirely filled by a pulsing mass of kaiju brain tissue. Nerve tendrils webbed out by the hundred, woven into electronics with no human interface to be seen. The kaiju brain was clearly damaged by the surge of energy from the failure of Obsidian Fury's data core. Parts of it were scorched and inert. Black streaks marked the interior of the Conpod, where circuitry had overloaded and loose conduits dangled near nerve endings that hung in blackened curls from the wounded part of the kaiju's brain. The scene was beyond nightmarish, a perversion of everything the Jaeger stood for. Jake reeled with the implications of it. Someone, somewhere, had kept a kaiju brain and redesigned a Jaeger from the ground up to use it. As they watched, astonished and revolted, the brain tissue began to convulse and seep both kaiju blood and other unidentifiable fluids. A minute later, it was dead and cooling, leaving Jake frustrated and at the same time even more determined. He had eliminated the tool used to kill Mako, yet he hadn't really found her killer. But he would. 17. Inventory report. Known samples of kaiju brain tissue. This report compiles all known kaiju brains held by PPDC personnel or affiliated civilian research programs. The following institutions possess licensed samples. List redacted. At the request of Marshal Kwan, urgent contact was initiated with all parties on this list to confirm the status of their samples. All parties reported their samples were present and intact. Further, all parties confirmed that they were not currently engaged in any effort to replicate existing tissue samples or grow new tissue. Parties provided evidence in the form of mass spectrometer scans and visual documentation, as well as documentation of all experiments performed on individual kaiju brains held. Inventory of kaiju brain tissue is confirmed at 100%, with no losses and no initial evidence of misuse or violation of research regulations. Conclusion. Obsidian Fury brain tissue did not originate with any PPDC facility or affiliated civilian research program. Other possible origins include black market sellers. PPDC Intelligence Division is pursuing this possibility. Technician K. McKinney, Moylan Shatterdome. They debriefed on the move from the Jaeger Bay toward Case Science, Jake walking down long maintenance corridors alongside a heavy forklift with Lambert and Kwan. The JTEC driving the forklift looked sick from the smell. Obsidian Fury was at that moment being lowered onto the tarmac outside the Shatterdome, not far from where Jake and Amara had first disembarked from the PPDC transport. Was that only a few days ago? Life came at you fast, Jake thought. He had already brought Kwan up to date in broad strokes, talking about the visual on the factory, his realization that they couldn't stand and fight with Obsidian Fury but had to outsmart it, and then their discovery of what was inside the rogue Jaeger's Conpod. Kwan had taken one look at the brain and gone stiff, the expression on his face almost religious in its revulsion. And it wasn't just the smell, either, although the kaiju brain by then was beginning to stink like nothing Jake had ever smelled before. They got it back under the tarp, as much to contain the stench as to hide the brain, and followed the forklift into one of the big testing rooms at the edge of the K-Science wing. Gottlieb had been warned they were coming in hot with something important, and he was there waiting for them. Whatever was in that facility, Obsidian Fury didn't want us getting a look, Jake said as he saw Gottlieb approach. Guessing it has something to do with this. He swept back the tarp covering the forklift's cargo, revealing the decaying remains of the kaiju brain from inside Obsidian Fury. The brain had suffered in transit, and they hadn't been real delicate when they took it out of Obsidian Fury's head, so in a lot of ways it looked worse than when Jake had first seen it in the blizzard up at Severnaya Zemlya. It was also rotting quickly, as kaiju flesh and organs also did, and the minute Jake lifted the tarp, a wave of odor rolled out from underneath, a miasma that made Jake's eyes water even though he had been smelling it for more or less the last 12 hours. The first thing Gottlieb did was try to stop himself from vomiting. He gagged visibly, turned away, hunched over, and then just barely held himself together. When he turned back around, the picture of composure again, Lambert said. No pilots, just this, whatever it is. I want to know everything about it, Quan ordered, inside and out. The look on Gottlieb's face made Jake uneasy. It was part disgust and part relish, or even a weird kind of intellectual lust. Jake knew Gottlieb had drifted with a kaiju brain once. That was part of PBDC lore, along with Raleigh Beckett bringing Gypsy Danger in on his own after his brother Yancey was killed, and Stacker Pentecost facing down Oni Baba solo after his partner went down. But Jake had heard Gottlieb didn't like it, and the experience had hardened him against the kaiju, given him a visceral hatred of them he hadn't felt before being in direct touch with their minds. Gottlieb never talked about it, so nobody really knew the truth about him, and maybe Newt Geisler. Right now, Gottlieb looked like a man who knew he was going to have to suffer, and also knew that the prize would be sufficient reward. I'm going to need a chainsaw, Gottlieb said. And he put it to good use, cutting away parts of the damaged exterior layers of the brain to see the intact tissue beneath. It was messy, stinking work, and by the time Gottlieb was done, his industrial rubber coverall and gloves were covered in splatters of toxic goo. He set down the chainsaw he'd used to get at the inner parts of the brain and peered at the organ, while Jake, Quan, and Lambert watched. Gottlieb got instruments from a nearby table and took samples before the tissue reacted too much to the ambient atmosphere. Then he stood up and said, It's definitely kaiju, a secondary brain, used to control the hindquarters. Like the dinosaurs? Lambert asked. He'd heard stories that the dinosaurs were engineered by the kaiju creators known as the Precursors. It was rumored that Newt Geisler and Gottlieb had learned this from drifting with a kaiju brain back in the darkest days of the kaiju war. No PPDC official had ever confirmed that, or the other rumor that Raleigh Beckett had learned the truth during his cataclysmic visit to the Antiverse itself. If the dinosaur story was true, the resemblance made sense, and the comparison was a natural one. Actually, that's a persistent myth, Gottlieb said, immediately sidetracked by a scientist's instinct to make sure everyone had their facts straight. Sauropods did have a sacrolumbar expansion once thought to... Jake didn't care about the details of sauropod or kaiju anatomy. There were more pressing questions. How did it get into our world? He asked. Hasn't been a breach in 10 years, Quan added. Sensors would have picked it up. I don't think there was a breach, Gottlieb said. He was back at a lab table, squinting at the tissue sample and passing various instruments over it. The readings appeared on a hollow screen, but they didn't match the baseline readings from the PPDC's database of known kaiju specimens. Kaiju flesh has a distinct radioactive half-life signature, particular to the antiverse. This specimen doesn't. Jake looked from Gottlieb to Lambert, wondering if Lambert was thinking the same thing he was. They'd both had the thought and the drift, in the first shocked moment after they'd seen the inside of Obsidian Fury's head. You saying it came from our universe? Lambert asked. The genetic fingerprints indicate distinctly terrestrial modification techniques. Gottlieb watched a screen as a genetic analysis scrolled by. To Jake, it looked like a column of random numbers next to a representation of a DNA molecule like any other DNA molecule. But that's why he was in the Rangers instead of K-Science. Gottlieb was fluent in whatever data language was being displayed, and he nodded at the screen.
Probably engineered from kaiju tissue left over from the war.
Marshal Kwan hadn't been there in Siberia, so he was just now getting his head around the idea.
Precursors didn't do this, he said, as if convincing himself. Humans did.
How'd a bunch of crazy kaiju worshippers do all that? Jake wondered. It didn't seem possible.
Gottlieb agreed. Doubtful they could have. Only a dozen or so biotech companies in the world could even take a run at it.
We need to narrow that list down, Kwan said. Fast. Gottlieb didn't need to be told twice. Every bit of kaiju tissue used for approved research purposes was catalogued, and the results of the research published in a central PPDC-administered database. That database didn't cover all kaiju tissue out there in the world, because there had been a lively black market in kaiju parts during the war. But it did cover the vast majority of the biotech research conducted on permitted samples. It was the best place to start because most of the companies working with black market samples didn't have the facilities to create something like an engineered kaiju brain. That kind of project took large-scale replication and cultivation laboratories, not to mention large groups of top-notch biologists and gene engineers. So Gottlieb's instinct was that the source of this brain was probably somewhere in the PPDC database. It made sense. Once Gottlieb was working, he ignored them. Kwan observed him for a while, then turned to Jake and Lambert.
Good work, he said. Mako would be proud.
To Jake, he added, so would your father. Jake appreciated the sentiment, but he wasn't so sure. Stacker Pentecost had never given any sign that anything Jake did had made him proud. For one of the human-sized access doors at the side of the Jaeger Bay doors, each taller than any building left standing in Los Angeles, Amara looked out across the tarmac at the broken hulk of Obsidian Fury. The rogue Jaeger's remains lay on the tarmac surrounded by shattered ohm security details, with JTEC crews swarming over it in the first phases of analysis and investigation. The revelation about Obsidian Fury's kaiju brain had swept through the shattered dome like wildfire, sparking a thousand rumors about whether or not there were other kaiju out there. Had a breach reopened, somehow undetected by PPDC satellites and geological sensors? Or had they missed other kaiju during the war? Or had someone in a gene lab managed to create a kaiju? Because Marshal Kwan wasn't talking, at least not to cadets. Any story seemed possible. She'd been with a group of other cadets watching as Gypsy Avenger returned. The marks of the battle with Obsidian Fury scarred Gypsy's armor, and Amara was especially chilled to see the damage to Gypsy's head. She couldn't imagine what it would be like to try and keep her cool while those plasma saws were chewing away at the conpod plating. The more she learned about Jake, the more she... well, not quite admired him. She wouldn't go that far. But she did have some respect for him, at least compared to how she felt when he was holding a broken pipe over her head back in the squat in Santa Monica. Lambert, too. He made such a point of being a humorless, overbearing tight ass to the cadets that it was easy to forget how good he was at piloting a Jaeger. He and Jake had taken down Obsidian Fury after barely escaping with their lives the last time the Jaegers clashed. Put together with the inspiring speech he dropped on the cadets a couple of nights ago, and Amara was starting to think Lambert was more of a human being than she'd suspected. It seemed like Jake had felt the same way after that speech, and now the results of their newfound spirit of cooperation were there for anyone to see. Obsidian Fury's torso was wrenched open, the black armor plating peeled back to expose the structural systems beneath. Its power core, crumpled and streaked with its lenses shattered, lay next to the main body of the Jaeger. The chainsword wound gaped in its leg. Like its torso, Obsidian Fury's head lay open to the sky. A specialist JTEC detail was working inside, beginning its analysis of exactly how Obsidian Fury's creator had learned to integrate the biological systems of a Jaeger brain with the complex electronics guiding a Jaeger. They'd all seen the brain go by on a pallet held up by a forklift. A crew had covered it on the forklift, but before that, they dug the brain out of Obsidian Fury's head and laid it on a tarp. Several of the JTEC team puked on the tarmac, and Jules yelled at them to keep it away from the tarp so they didn't contaminate the samples K-Science would be taking. The cadets couldn't believe what they were seeing.
That hunk of kaiju was part of a Jaeger?
Suresh couldn't believe it.
Really thought it was going to be ballerinos, Jinhai commented. If Vic had been around, she might have punched him.
They'd been bantering like that ever since, hanging around the perimeter of the investigation area, and hoping that someone would ask them to do something. It hadn't happened yet, but Amara at least wasn't giving up. The idea of a Jaeger that fused kaiju biology and human tech. It horrified her and fascinated her both, but mostly fascinated. Immediately, she intuited that the direct brain interface accounted for the speed of Obsidian Fury's reactions. Even the best drift cradles had a slight delay, as the Ranger's brain signals were processed and transmitted to the Jaeger's control systems. Could a human brain be wired directly? Probably. But what would it do to the pilot? The other question she had was purely technical. Even without considering the quicker responses due to the direct brain-Jaeger interface, Obsidian Fury was nimbler and quicker than any other existing Jaeger. There were tech innovations there in its ruined body, and Amara really wanted to know what they were. She had to know. Staying there looking at it, she felt a physical itch in her fingers. So powerful was her need to get into that Jaeger and see how it worked.
"We gotta get a look inside," she said.
"Inside?" Suresh echoed.
"The thing's part kaiju. Come on, guys."
She turned to the group. "When are we ever going to get a chance to see something like this again?"
"Never," Suresh said. "Never would be good."
"Stay here if you want, but I'm going."
Amara looked back over the tarmac. She'd spent the last several years figuring out how to liberate bits of machinery from other people who wanted to keep them. She could get past Shattered Dome security in her sleep. And she was going to. 18.
Jaeger Watch, breaking news! Your friends at Jaeger Watch have some interesting tidbits from our eyes inside the Moylan Shatterdome. You may have heard of the rogue Jaeger attack in Sydney, where Gypsy Avenger got more than she bargained for from a mysterious assailant since given the codename Obsidian Fury. Well, we have it on good authority that Gypsy got revenge. The details are sketchy, but our Moylan source claims that Obsidian Fury was brought in last night, just after Gypsy went out on an emergency deployment. It's not hard to put those pieces together, though from what we understand, nobody's going to be putting Obsidian Fury together again. Gypsy took the rogue down hard and in a highly permanent way. High five to the Rangers piloting Gypsy Avenger. You might have gone down once, but you answered the bell the second time around and, well, avenged. Makamori and all the others dead in Sydney can rest a little easier. Yours, the spirit of Gypsy Danger.
They took some convincing, but eventually the other cadets went along with her plan. Amara pointed out that the Shatterdome security personnel were stationed at specific intervals and changed shift at specific times. They were like any other on-base security detail, doing their jobs but not really convinced there was an actual threat justifying their presence. So it ended up being pretty easy to point out three or four spots where a determined group of teenagers could slip through the security perimeter and gain entry to Obsidian Fury via one of the several holes Gypsy Avenger had thoughtfully created in Obsidian Fury's armor. The one they ended up choosing was down in the leg. It was the closest to ground level. The security details were clustered around the ladders and gantries that led up to higher entry points in Obsidian Fury's head and torso. Single file, they climbed in through the comma-shaped gouge made when Gypsy Avenger had stuck the sword in and then dragged it back out. Only when they were well inside the Jaeger, working their way down a corridor inside its thigh, did they turn on flashlights. Amara looked up, blade the beam of her flashlight across the ceiling. In a regular Jaeger, the ceiling of a hall like this would have been lined with heavy conduits and bundles of smaller cables, each tagged and color-coded so technicians could quickly isolate problems and make repairs. But Obsidian Fury was different. There were wires and cables, sure, but wound through all of them were filaments of kaiju tissue. She looked up and down the hallway and found a hatch. She opened it and peered into the larger space beyond. It was like being inside a body instead of a machine. Long, striated sinews and nerve bundles mingled with hydraulic piston assemblies and energy conduits. The sight overwhelmed her, just the scale of it, and the oppressive sensation that there was something still living here. Amara dropped back down into the corridor.
"It's fused all the way through the system,"
she said, running the beam of her flashlight as far along the ceiling as they could see.
"Like muscle tissue."
That's how it was able to move like it did, Jinhai observed. Cool. He wasn't talking about ballerinas anymore, instead admiring this fantastic interweaving of organic tissue and machine. Obsidian Fury was practically a cyborg. A kaiju cyborg. What a thought. Suresh did not share their enthusiasm.
Yeah, cool, he said in a tone of voice that conveyed the opposite. Working with boobs is sounding better and better.
An odd bundle of cables caught Amara's attention. Had she seen something like them before? Shine your light over there, she said, and put down her own light so she could get her hands on them. Jinhai kept his light steady while she tried to wrestle one of the cables loose.
Oh, great, yeah, Suresh said. Let's go yanking on the guts of a weird-ass kaiju killbot.
Sack up or shut up, Malin said. She didn't say much, but when she did, she made her words count.
Is there a third option?
Suresh was still watching Amara and getting more nervous by the moment.
I'd really like a third option.
Amara had to brace herself against a heavy bracket and pull with all her strength, jerking the cable back and forth. But eventually she got it loose from a juncture and was able to snap the other end free from where it was spliced into the bundle. She started looking more closely at the cross-section of the cable, peeling back its outer insulating layer to expose the winding around the inner core. She'd seen this before when she was acquiring cables to build Scrapper's power systems. Jinhai leaned in close, trying to figure out what had Amara so preoccupied.
What is it?
She was about to tell him when fat drops of kaiju blood suddenly dripped from the ceiling. They missed Amara by sheer luck, but Jinhai wasn't so lucky. Several splattered on his arm, dissolving the sleeve of his coat and searing the flesh underneath. Jinhai bit down on a scream and dropped to the floor, rolling around in agony.
Jinhai!
Amara dropped the cable and started pulling his jacket off, trying to get him free before more of the blood ate through the insulated fabric.
I told you not to yank on those!
Suresh shouted. Amara looked up and saw where the blood was coming from. While she'd been jerking at the cables, a bracket holding several of them together had scraped against a kaiju blood vessel running among the tissue that lined the ceiling. Eventually, the vessel had burst, and now kaiju blood was dissolving the cables and dripping down from them to the floor. It hissed and smoked on the steel grating. She felt so bad about what she'd done to Jinhai, accident or no accident, that she completely forgot about how much trouble they were going to be in.
Go get help! Go!
Oh, man, we are so screwed,
Suresh said. He and Malin ran back the way they'd come, weaving around droplets of kaiju blood that spattered down from other parts of the ceiling as the vessel continued to drain. Malin was shouting for a medic as they ran, and Amara heard confused shouts from the Shattered Dome security outside. She had Jinhai's jacket off, but his arm was badly burned and the kaiju blood was still bubbling at the edges of the wound. He gripped Amara's arm painfully tight, teeth clenched to keep himself from screaming. She sat with him, taking the pain, trying to comfort him until the medics arrived. Then she knew the real consequences would start to unfold. They were all in deep shit, but Amara had the feeling she was in the deepest of all. But whatever happened to her, she had to make sure Jake and Marshal Kwan heard what she'd found. 19. In aftermath of rogue Jaeger attack, drone program moves ahead. From Wire Service Reports. The origin of the rogue Jaeger known as Obsidian Fury is still a mystery, but its attack on the Pan-Pacific Defense Corps Council meeting in Sydney 2 days ago appears to have given extra momentum to Shao Industries' proposed replacement of human-piloted Jaegers with drones. Meeting in an emergency session with quorum rules waived due to the number of counselors killed in the Sydney attack, the council gave final approval to the drone deployment. Individual members cited the need to protect Shatterdomes against potential future rogue Jaegers, as well as the need to have a single central control facility so no existing Jaeger could be hijacked and turned against the PPDC or civilians. Fiery opposition came from the two retired Rangers on the council, both of whom argued forcefully that drone Jaegers would not be able to react in a battlefield situation with the same speed and intuition a human pilot could demonstrate. Their arguments failed to carry the day, however, and the final count found only their 2 votes in the nay column. Shao Industry spokesman Joseph Burke, himself a former Ranger, expressed gratitude for the decision. "We think the council has acted wisely," he said, "and we look forward to getting the drone Jaegers in the field so they can prevent anything like this terrible attack from ever happening again." Shattered Elm security put Amara straight into a holding cell while the medics were still working on Jinhai. The room's only furniture was a small table and two chairs. She sat down and waited for more than an hour, feeling more and more guilty and anxious as she watched people go by. Most of them didn't look at her. Those who did were either disgusted or pitying. News of her offense had traveled fast. She saw Jake in the hall outside the holding cell, pacing back and forth. A few minutes later, Marshal Kwan appeared. He and Jake started talking, and the conversation quickly grew animated, then really heated. Jake was furious about something, and Kwan, if Amara was reading his body language right, was demanding that Jake follow orders. Eventually, Kwan made one last point and then stalked back down the hall the way he'd come. Jake stood watching him go. He rubbed his face, and Amara realized it must be pretty late at night by now. She'd lost track of time. For Jake, it must have seemed even later. He probably hadn't slept since before Gypsy Avenger's feet had made contact with the snow outside the old factory on the Tamer Peninsula. He opened the door and came inside. "Is Jinhai okay?" she asked. That was the most important thing. She knew she was in for some punishment, and she could take it. She'd earned it. But if Jinhai's injuries made him unfit for ranger duty, Amara knew she would never forgive herself. "There's going to be some scarring, but yeah, he'll live." Amara let out a long sigh, feeling at least that worry leave her. "Marshals put him on probation," Jake went on. "Malin and Suresh, too. They blink wrong, all of them are out."
"It wasn't their fault," Amara said. "I talked them into it."
Before they got into the part of the conversation where Jake told her how stupid she was, Amara wanted to make sure he heard about what she'd found inside Obsidian Fury.
"Jake, there's something..."
He held up a hand. "Amara, I tried to talk to the marshal." After a brief pause, he added, "I'm sorry. You're dismissed from the program." This hurt more than Amara had thought it would. In the past few days, she had just started to see the possibility of a life beyond squatting in the ruins of Santa Monica, dodging gang psychopaths and stealing to meet her needs. She'd found a family, just like Lambert had talked about. And now she'd blown it. Because she had to push the boundaries, had to act like the rules didn't apply to her.
"Doesn't matter," she said, trying to stay impassive. "I never belonged here anyway."
Jake crossed the room and sat at the other chair. "I said the same thing, long time ago, but I didn't want to be here, not like you." Amara knew what he was doing. She appreciated it, but at the same time, she wished they would just get everything over with. If she was kicked out, she was kicked out. She would go and try not to ever look back.
"Then why'd you sign up?"
"We were at war," he said. "My dad was leading the charge. I thought, I don't know, maybe I'd see more of him, get assigned to a squadron, maybe even drift with him. But this weird thing happened. Turns out I was damn good at it." He smiled at the memory of this discovery, but the smile didn't last. He went on with his story, and for once Amara didn't interrupt him with a sarcastic remark. "Then one night, Nate, Ranger Lambert, and I get into it. Over something stupid. I don't even remember what. So I climbed into an old Mark IV to show him I didn't need him or anybody else to be a great pilot."
"Wow, that was stupid."
Amara had already heard the story of Jake holding adrift for hours, but this was something else entirely. This was nuts, impossible, something only a few people had ever managed to do. And Jake had done it just to prove a point after an argument? That was, she didn't know what it was. Crazy, ballsy, reckless, maybe even admirable, all at once. Jake shook his head. Again, a little smile appeared and disappeared. "Yeah, took two steps and blacked out from the strain." His voice started to shake with emotion as he kept talking. "First thing I saw when I woke up in the infirmary was my dad. He told me I was out of the program. I begged him to ask them to let me stay, that I'd try harder, be a better soldier. He said there was no one to ask. The decision was his, said I didn't deserve to be in a Jaeger. He said a lot of other things, and so did I. Soon as I could stand up, I left and never looked back." Jake wasn't looking at her, and Amara had the feeling that he wasn't entirely talking to her by then either. They had drifted together, so she had an intimate sense of how he viewed his father. But this was deep, buried underneath the top layer of memories that was all she and Jake had shared thus far. A year later, he was gone, Jake said. I never got the chance to prove him wrong. More importantly, I never got the chance to prove it to myself. Now he was looking at her again and talking to her directly, but she still had the feeling that he was articulating a conversation he was having with himself just as much as he was trying to give her a last bit of guidance before she went back out into the world beyond the Shatter Dome. Because I was angry and hurt. Don't let what other people think define who you are, Amara. You won't like where that takes you. He stood and moved toward the door, but paused before leaving. And keep your head up, and you might just be as good-looking as me in this type of situation. She rolled her eyes. Seriously, this face is set up well, he added with a grin. Beauty is a burden. You'll be all right. He had a hand on the door. Amara tried to process it all. What was she supposed to do with all this? Go to Marshal Kwan and beg for her cadet position like Jake had? Or just go forth in the world and realize she'd learned a hard lesson? Or was Jake hinting that there was another way for her to save herself and stay here with all these new people she had just begun to care about? She was so preoccupied with sorting through all those conflicting thoughts that she almost forgot about what she'd meant to tell him right at the beginning. But now he was walking toward the door and she would never have another chance. Shao Industries, she blurted out. That's what I was trying to tell you. Obsidian Fury has tech in it made by Shao Industries. He stopped and turned slowly around. Jules and her team scanned every centimeter of that Jaeger. They didn't find any serial numbers or identifying markers. The implied question, how had Amara found something on her little jaunt that a trained JTEC team had missed? Insulating metamaterials wound counterclockwise in the shunt cabling, she said. Shao's the only company winds them that way. She was confident, and her confidence cut at least part of the way through Jake's initial skepticism. Amara, are you sure? She had him. Yeah, stole a ton of it to make scrapper, Amara said, a little of her normal bravado returning. Then, almost offhand, she added, thought it might be important. She saw Jake thinking, saw him working through the logical consequences of this find. There were three potential reasons for Obsidian Fury to have Shao Industries tech. One was simple theft or reuse of materials originally built into a legitimate Shao product. The other two. Don't go anywhere, he told her and shut the door behind him. 20.
Shao Industries? Gottlieb sounded skeptical. They don't even have a bio-research division.
That we know of, Jake said. Cabling could have been stolen just like an Amara's Jaeger, Lambert pointed out. We need more than that to link Obsidian Fury to Shao.
What about Newt? He'd have access to internal records, shipping manifests.
Go see him, Jake suggested. Keep it low profile. Gottlieb's face lit up.
A mission, he said, delighted. I have a secret mission.
At first, Kwan was just as skeptical as Gottlieb, but he didn't dismiss the idea out of hand. He was too professional a soldier for that. He might have just argued with Jake over Amara's fate in the cadet program, and he might have had just about enough of Jake Pentecost's continual tendency to bend the rules and shoot off his mouth. But if anything about Amara Namani's accusation could be confirmed, that was potential evidence in the investigation of the death of Secretary General Mako Mori. Not to mention hundreds, if not thousands, of other people in downtown Sydney. The final casualty counts were still coming in as rescue teams dug through the rubble of the area between the waterfront and the council building. Before Kwan could make any decisions, he had to work through the implications. Most importantly, he had to decide how the cadet's discovery affected the inquiry into Mako's death.
You think Mako was the real target in the Sydney attack?
That was where Jake had begun his argument. The data package she sent led to that facility in Severnaya, he said, expecting Kwan to put the rest of the pieces together himself. Lambert was more direct. She must have found out what was happening there. If the PPDC knew Lien was experimenting with kaiju bioweapons? Jake paused, and Lambert picked up where he'd left off. It was something longtime ranger partners tended to do after dozens of drifts together. The fact that Lambert and Pentecost were already doing it suggested they had a stronger-than-average drift connection.
No drone program, Lambert said. No Shao Industries. Nothing but a prison cell. Quan wasn't so sure about that. People with Shao Lian's money and clout usually avoided prison. But there was no question Lambert was right about the drone program and the fate of Shao's company.
The attack on the council, the kaiju cults, all a smokescreen, Jake said. Misdirection.
It was plausible. Quan had to admit that, but hardly airtight.
And the only proof is from a cadet I just drop-kicked over the moon?
Ghalib's reaching out to Newt to see if he can dig up anything more solid from the inside, Lambert said. Quan chewed on that for a while. He didn't like the idea of involving Gottlieb, who was a solid and brilliant scientist, but perhaps not the best person to involve in a discreet investigation, particularly not if it meant informing Newton Geisler of the PPDC's suspicions. Marshal Quan, like most other staff officers who had ever worked with Newt, considered that he might well be a genius, but was definitely an unreliable loose cannon when it came to protocols and rules.
All right, he said. We'll patch through to the council and see what...
I don't think we should trust the comms, Pentecost said. Quan was about to dress him down for interrupting a superior. He had lost the last of his patience for Pentecost's mouth. But before he could, Pentecost added, Mako didn't, or she would have told someone before Sydney. This made sense to Quan. He considered it, looked for holes in the logic, found none.
Then we'll take it to them in person. Meet me on the tarmac in 15.
What about Amara? Pentecost asked. She found the link to Shao Industries.
If you're right about this, we have bigger problems, Ranger.
Quan left the two Rangers in the hall, entering the war room to make arrangements for the trip to Sydney. Out in the hall, Jake fumed, wishing he could do more for Amara. She had screwed up, yeah, there was no doubt about that. But if in the process of screwing up she had pinpointed Mako's killer and uncovered a dangerous program of illicit kaiju-related biotech research... To Jake, that was more than enough to give her a get-out-of-jail-free card on the injury to Jinhai and the unauthorized snooping inside Obsidian Fury. Rangers weren't supposed to be robots. They were supposed to know when to take the initiative. Amara had done that, and as far as Jake was concerned, the Ranger Corps would be better off with her than without. But that was a conversation for another time, specifically after they had discovered whether Amara's discovery led where Jake was beginning to think it would. Shao Industries was on target to hit its deadline, a full drone Jaeger deployment 48 hours from her first order. Shao herself had seen to this, berating and terrorizing the staff, from the lowliest tech all the way up to Dr. Geisler. They might fear her, some might hate her, but they worked hard for her, and all that work was paying off. She strode through the lobby of Shao Industries research headquarters in Shanghai, watching results and a data pad in her hands. Chief Kang fell into step with her, fresh from a check on the building's security systems.
The building is secure, ma'am.
No visitors without the proper credentials, she ordered. That would mean closing the public areas of the Shao Industries building, but at this point Shao didn't care. She was too close to the realization of a dream she had pursued since before the end of the Kaiju War, when she had seen dying pilots and each time thought, what a waste. Why do we send young men and women out in the Jaegers when they might as easily control them from a Shatterdome? When the sun rose in the morning, that question would be answered. We don't anymore. I don't want anyone interfering with deployment, she added, in case Chief Kang hadn't already gotten the point. Her data pad chirped. She looked down at it and angled it away from Kang, frowning.
I'll be in my office, she said, dismissing him.
Kang nodded.
Ma'am?
He walked briskly off, leaving her to grapple with what she was seeing on her screen. It wasn't possible, was it?
21. Cadet Discharge Report. Cadet, Amara Namani. Reasons for discharge. Reckless conduct resulting in injury to PPDC personnel. Interference with PPDC intelligence investigation. Failure to follow training regulations. Summary. Cadet Namani encouraged fellow cadets to accompany her on an unauthorized foray into the remains of the destroyed rogue Jaeger Obsidian Fury. During the course of this activity, she evaded security and damaged the interior of Obsidian Fury.
The damage resulted in the release of kaiju blood and injury to Cadet Jinhai. Cadet Namani exhibited contrition and did not attempt to evade responsibility, which speaks well of her character. Ordinarily, conduct such as hers would result in a dishonorable discharge, but her record will reflect dismissal without the further censure of a dishonorable designation. Cadet Namani will be returned to her former home in Santa Monica, California. BBDC will suggest to local law enforcement that she not be prosecuted for her offenses there. Signed, Marshal Kwan. Amara did what Jake had told her to do. She stayed in the room until PPDC security came to get her. But whatever faint hope of mercy she'd still held on to evaporated when they let her out the door and then said, "By PPDC regulations, you are permitted to observe as we clear your belongings out of your locker. If you have concerns about our handling of your personal items, you may register those concerns verbally. But under no circumstances will you approach the security personnel who are performing the locker clear out. Is that understood?" She nodded without speaking so they wouldn't hear the tremor she knew would be in her voice. They led her to the barracks, where the rest of the cadets stood watching as security emptied Amara's locker. They were competent and professional, even folding her clothes as they stowed them in her duffel bag. In a way, this made Amara angrier than she otherwise would have been. If they'd been careless or deliberately destructive, at least she could have gotten angry about that. But no, they were treating her exactly by the book. She would miss that. Back in Santa Monica, there was no book. You got away with what you could until someone stronger or smarter than you put an end to it. Amara was only then realizing how much she was going to miss a world governed by rules. "This isn't fair," Suresh said. Amara looked up as Jinhai approached her. His arm was heavily bandaged from thumb to above the elbow. It was hard for Amara to look at, but she made herself do it. Actions had consequences. She had caused this, and she didn't have any right to look away because it made her uncomfortable. "I tried to talk to my parents," Jinhai said, "but they wouldn't listen."
"It was my mission," Amara said, trying to let him off the hook. "This is on me."
She appreciated his gesture, but regulations were regulations. She hadn't caught a break because her parents didn't have any influence, but if she had caught a break, that wouldn't have been abiding by the rules, would it? You couldn't have it both ways. Her locker was empty and the security detail came to lead her out.
"Amara," Vic called. "The next Jaeger you build? Make it a big one."
She grinned, and Amara almost lost it then, at that gesture of support from Vic of all people. She remembered Vic taunting her, "Bigger is better." God, how was she going to leave all these people and go back to the life she'd been leading before? Were they even going to let her keep Scrapper? Security held the door for her as she left. Amara didn't look back because she didn't want the rest of the cadets to see the tears in her eyes. Newt had been in the lab for almost 24 hours straight, cracking the whip over his tech crew as they slowly ticked off deployment after deployment. The plan overall was to have demonstrations of drone Jaeger teams at all the major cities around the Pacific Rim, from Vladivostok all the way around through Los Angeles, and back up through Sydney, Shanghai, Tokyo. It was a lot of drones, and that meant a lot of drift-trained pilots Shao had hired away from the PPDC. Other drone pilots were veterans of Ranger service, and had gotten their drift training from new cradles and simulation rigs of Newt's own design. Though, of course, because he was working for Shao, she held all the patents and got all the credit. Sometimes that bothered him. She couldn't have pulled this off without him, and she knew it, even though she would never have admitted it in front of him. But that was all right. Newt had a pretty good idea just how smart and capable he was. Sometimes that came across as arrogance, but what the hell? That was the price you paid for being honest. Right now he didn't have patents or credit on his mind. He was singularly focused, as focused as he'd been able to get in weeks, if not months. In Santa Monica, there was one last tricky pair of drones that were having trouble processing the signals from their drift pilots here in the remote con lab. It took up most of a floor in the Shao Industries Tower, nearly a full city block of equipment and drift cradles modified to operate solo without the immediate visual and tactile stimulus that came from working inside a Jaeger. Here, everything was done virtually. 100 pilots, in nice even rows of 20, worked identical drift rigs conveying their commands to identical drones. Glancing over at them, Newt felt a flush of pride.
This was so much better than relying on the two-pilot drift to control a Jaeger. The interaction of two minds always caused unexpected emotional resonance, which complicated the task of handling thousands of tons of heavily armored steel. With a single remote pilot, not only were commands clearer, the pilots were safer. Kaiju, or any other enemy, couldn't get them here in the remote con lab. This was the next step in Jaeger evolution. Newt felt good about it, like he was about to change the world. He worked the deployment screen, making sure the drift connections were stable and the drones were coming online according to the specified schedule. They were almost there. The drift rigs handling the Santa Monica drones went from red to green. Stable drift, good contact, drones operational. They were flanking November Ajax, conveying a message of unity to the millions of people watching all over the world. At other shatter domes and other cities, drones marched out in formation with Jaegers. Where there were no Jaegers, Shao had made sure there were video feeds showing the lockstep presentation of drones and traditional Jaegers. She very much wanted everyone to believe that the drones weren't replacing the Jaegers, even though Newt didn't see how anyone could believe that for more than a split second after they saw the drones in action. The last two drones were still being flown into Moylan's Shatterdome, but their board readouts were also green. Even though the Jump Hawks hadn't dropped them yet, they were ready for service. Their pilots grumbled about being the last to actually take the field. Newt decided he was calling it. Every drone but Moylan was up and running, and those last two were deploying at that moment. "Delivery at 100%, he crowed, setting off cheers from the techs in the lab. "That right there, that's the way you do it!" Almost as soon as he got the words out of his mouth, warning lights started to flash. In the Moylan Shatterdome Locent, a technician noted strange energy signatures coming from the two drones now approaching the Shatterdome tarmac. In the remote con lab at Shao Industries, warning lights blazed across Newt's command screen. The closest remote pilot was Shao's favorite, Burke. He wrestled with his controls as the holodisplays around him started to change color and deform. "Losing uplink to drone 375. Other pilots echoed the warning. Newt spun back to the command readout. All over the remote con lab, warning lights flashed and the colors of the screens around the pilots coruscated and changed. Something about the sight was familiar to Newt, but he couldn't think what. 22. Valor Omega stood sentinel outside the Jaeger bay doors of the Moylan Shatterdome, awaiting the arrival of the final drones that threatened to make it and all other human-piloted Jaegers obsolete. That was the feeling among the Rangers and JTACs, despite Xiao Lien's assurances to the contrary. The lights of approaching Jump Hawks, together with the running lights on the drones they carried, came steadily closer, approaching the Shatterdome from the south. Amara looked up at them as PPDC security escorted her to a helicopter that was going to take her, well, she didn't know, home? There was nothing there for her. What was she going to do next? Jake got her eye from across the tarmac, where he had been about to board another Jump Hawk. Amara wondered where he could be going in such a hurry. She hoped it had something to do with the information she'd given him about the cables inside Obsidian Fury, but she couldn't know. Nobody was talking to her about anything right now except when they gave her commands to go somewhere. The sound of the Jump Hawks was getting loud now as Jake came trotting across the tarmac toward her. Was he going to tell security to let her go? Amara's heart leaped at the possibility, but she knew it was more likely Jake was just coming over to say goodbye one last time. Before Jake had taken 10 steps, an urgent voice broke through the background noise in his comlink. One of the techs up in the Locent was shouting in Mandarin. He stopped and looked back at Marshal Kwan, who translated, "There's something wrong with the drones." Jake looked up just as vivid purplish energy crackled out from the drones' heads. Tendrils of pulsing kaiju flesh bulged out of the seams in their armor plating, coiling into each other and fusing with the drones' electronic systems. The system overload made the drones spasm and thrash their limbs, destabilizing the Jump Hawk's flight patterns. The Jump Hawks spun into one another and the cables holding the drones snapped. They fell the last few hundred feet to the tarmac as the Jump Hawks spun down and disintegrated in a blast he could feel all the way across the tarmac. As the drones hit the ground near the hydraulic lifts providing water access to deploying Jaegers, they were already opening fire.
A barrage of plasma missiles raked the tarmac, destroying vehicles and exploding at the edge of the Jaeger Bay doors. Then the drones turned their attention to the rows of parked Jump Hawks and V-Dragons, methodically smashing their way through them. Some of the V-Dragons and smaller helicopters got into the air, but the drones blew them out of the sky, their flaming wreckage falling to the waters of Qingshan Bay. Those that got close enough to fire on the drones were swatted down to the tarmac, where they burned amid the wreckage of scramblers and forklifts.
"Get to Gypsy!"
Marshal Kwan ordered Jake and Lambert. They took off running as Kwan issued more orders into his comlink.
"All pilots, man your Jaegers and engage hostiles!"
Inside the Jaeger Bay, Rangers and JTEC crews sprinted to their stations. Valor Omega was outside the bay, and the Kaiju drones turned their attention in that direction. A double volley of missiles blasted Valor Omega apart before her crew could even get the Jaeger online. The violence of the explosion killed her crew and both of her Ranger pilots. Pieces of the destroyed Jaeger skidded across the tarmac and rained down for hundreds of yards in every direction, splashing into the bay and pinging off the outside of the Shatter Dome. Valor Omega's severed head bounced twice and then rolled, missing Amara by only a few feet as she dove out of the way at the last second. Her security escorts weren't so lucky. The head smashed through them and demolished the chopper waiting to take her away before crashing to a halt against the outer wall of the Shatter Dome. Still on the ground, she looked around, overwhelmed by the horror of the attack. Missile after missile blasted parked Jump Hawks, JTEC transports, clusters of fleeing Shatter Dome personnel. The drones were working methodically across the tarmac, from the landing strips to the far side, where the deployment gantry still stood untouched. Satellite feeds inside Alosan showed the same unfolding catastrophe all over the world. Drones went rogue and attacked in Anchorage, Guam, Lima, Attu, and Santa Monica, where November Ajax burned against the backdrop of the Kaiju bones at the pier. Kwan saw the Shatter Dome at Fukuoka collapse, sending up a mushrooming ball of smoke. In the shallow waters of Lake Washington, a Jaeger lay face down, the ripples of its impact still spreading outward as a drone pumped missiles into its back. In Manila, drones strode up the Pasig River, the North Harbor waterfront ablaze behind them. The feed from Jakarta showed one drone down, but the second stood over the inert remains of the defending Jaeger. All over the world, the scene was the same. Only on the Sydney waterfront, defended by the few anti-Kaiju cannons that had survived Obsidian Fury, did the PPDC appear to be winning. The cannon batteries pounded the drones trying to follow Obsidian Fury's path of destruction, saving what remained of the PPDC council building. This was supposed to be a day of celebration, a new stage in the development of the PPDC and the Jaeger Corps. Instead, thought Marshal Kwan, it was entirely possible that by the end of the night, there would be no Jaeger Corps left at all. 23. Pan-Pacific Defense Corps Joint Security Directive, not for public consumption. To all local and regional authorities in PPDC oversight territories, drone Jaegers and their initial deployments are attacking Ranger-piloted Jaegers, Shatter Domes, and other PPDC installations. All drone Jaeger should be destroyed on site using any and all available weapons short of tactical nuclear options. All civilian populations and non-essential PPD staff must be evacuated from the areas near the drone attacks. Jump Hawks, V-Dragons, and other PPDC aircraft currently deployed should not return to their home Shatter Domes. Activate existing protocols for redirecting PPDC aircraft in emergency situations per landing agreements at other regional facilities. Until further notice, no Shao Industries contractors are to be permitted in any Shatter Dome facility without personal clearance from that Shatter Dome's marshal or acting marshal. No PPDC personnel are to comment publicly on these events under any circumstances. PPDC Council outreach staff in Sydney will coordinate public response and dissemination of information. It is particularly emphasized that PPDC personnel should not answer questions regarding Kaiju tissue or Kaiju components in drone Jaegers. Newt hurried through the halls of Shao Industries on his way to Shao's offices. She needed a personal update on what was happening, and she really needed to hear it from him. That was urgent in a way that Newt felt without really understanding why he felt it so keenly. He was still in shock from what he'd seen in the lab. Every single drone Jaeger had first gone offline and then surged back to active status under independent control. The feedback through the remote drift cradles had killed almost all of the pilots in the remote con lab. It was a horrific sight. The ones who had survived had devastating brain injuries.
Most of them lay twitching in their cradles, muttering gibberish or just moaning without words. Newt had ordered the tech crew to try to re-establish control over the drones, broadcasting automatic emergency shutdown codes, but they had all been ignored. In short, Newt had just overseen the deployment of dozens of hostile Jaegers that were in the process of destroying PPDC installations